Jesus and Mary, now and forever. We're going to continue our reflections on the marks of love, which St. Paul speaks of in 1 Corinthians 13. The 10th mark, which we're going to discuss today, is that love does not rejoice in wrongdoing. It's 1 Corinthians 13, verse 6. Other translations here say that love doesn't rejoice, or it takes no pleasure in injustice, in unrighteousness, or in evil. The word that's used in Greek is adikia. The Greek word for justice or righteousness is dike, D-I-K-E. So you put an A before that, and that becomes a negation. It becomes adikia, injustice, unrighteousness, or evil. So one of the signs of love is that it doesn't find pleasure in anything that's wrong. This can be understood in different ways. Firstly, love doesn't find any joy in sin or in doing what's evil in God's eyes. When speaking of the second coming of Christ, St. Paul says in his letter to the Thessalonians that those who refuse to love the truth, he says, God will send upon them, quote, a strong delusion to make them believe what is false, so that all may be condemned who did not believe in the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness, says St. Paul, 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 11 and 12. It means that God will withdraw his merciful, restraining grace from those who deny or suppress the truth. And when God withdraws his grace, really bad things happen. It's actually a very similar picture to what God does to those who refuse to acknowledge the truth and give themselves over to unnatural sexual relations. St. Paul speaks of that in Romans 1:18 and following. Homosexual sin is literally celebrated in our Western culture today. Just even yesterday, a Luxembourg cardinal said publicly that the church's teaching on homosexuality is wrong and that it needs to be updated to fit the times. I'm wondering how many other teachings he thinks need to be updated as well. I bet I can guess a handful of them. But anyway, it reminded me of what Peter Kraft once wrote or said. He said that the modern day church heresies are not so much doctrinal as they are moral. So the real problem in the church today is predominantly a moral one. Sin itself is irrational, but it can always be rationalized if our will is corrupted. If it's our will, not God's will, that we want done on earth. So it's the inversion of the Our Father prayer, right? Turning it upside down. My will be done on earth, not thy will be done. So when you find joy in sin, God withdraws his grace from you. God cannot and does not bless sin, because that would be an unloving thing to do. Saying that love doesn't rejoice in wrongdoing also means that love doesn't rejoice at other people's misfortunes. Sometimes we prefer to hear of others' misfortunes rather than their good fortune, right? That's not a good thing. God doesn't want us to take pleasure in the illness or misfortune of others. Ezekiel 18:23 says that God doesn't take pleasure in the death of the wicked. And Proverbs 24:17 says, do not rejoice when your enemies fall, and when they stumble, do not let your heart exalt. So there is a type of satisfaction when justice is done or when the world is rid of a certain evil, but that shouldn't cross the line and make us become like our enemies who wish evil upon us and rejoice when bad things happen to us. That's the language of hatred. God wants that to be a foreign language to his children, a foreign language that we don't understand and don't speak. And it will happen, and it is true, that those who accuse you of hatred and bigotry and even racism nowadays, they're often very ones who are guilty of it themselves, right? It's called psychological projection. People project onto you the evil that's in their own heart. And that, too, is a sign that God has withdrawn his grace from those people, that his judgment is actually upon them. The one who loves with a pure heart always wishes a blessing on others. They especially wish that others would turn to the Lord and live in his grace. So those who are on the side of love, therefore on God's side, shouldn't be given over to vengeance. The apostle says in Romans 12:14, bless those who persecute you, bless them and do not curse them. That includes those in the church who persecute you, as well of all things, for being faithful to the teachings of the church. Irony of ironies. We shouldn't repay them or others with venom or nastiness or condemnation. I like to say condemnation is not the nation that God wants us to live in. Pardon the pun. So hatred should not be our language. Condemnation isn't our nation. Yet we are called to hate what God hates, which is evil. We are also called to condemn sin and sinful behavior. We're also called to know when to speak and when to be silent and simply pray about things. Basically, you need to have the wisdom and the guidance of God to navigate through life, because there are many ways, either by excess or by defect, that we can sin against this virtue of charity. It takes a lot of strength of character to respond graciously to those who hate us and are against us, whether they're in the church or not. But that's how we are called to respond. St. Peter says, do not return evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead, because to this you were called, that you might inherit a blessing. 1 Peter 3, verse 9. And as we've noted in our other reflections, it takes really a lot of strength to love. When you think about it, it takes a lot of strength to be patient, strength to be kind, strength to be firm, yet gracious. We said before that love doesn't rejoice in others' misfortunes. It also doesn't take pleasure in punishing others, so it's not sadistic. At the same time, it's highly sensitive to the harm done to others and to injustice. Love may not worry so much about itself and its own reputation, but it does worry about others. Jesus speaks of blessed mourners in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, verse 4, those who mourn and pray for those who suffer evil, and also for those who commit evil as well. Lastly, regarding wrongdoing, if we're okay, so far regarding the checklist of love not rejoicing in evil, so far it looks like we're doing pretty well. We might not be so okay on this last one. It's the fact that love also doesn't have a critical or judgmental spirit. Love is not fault-finding. So if you're good at finding fault, you have to get rid of that talent and learn to be good at finding other things. As we've said in our other reflections, love excuses more than it accuses. It's excusing and merciful in the face of others' defects and sins and struggles. And this unloving defect of having a critical spirit also includes things like detraction, which we have to be very careful about. Catechism at number 2477 defines detraction as disclosing others and others' faults and failings to persons who didn't know them without an objectively valid reason. And just because it makes for a good story is not an objectively valid reason. Sometimes you have to tell about others' defects or sins regarding what they do wrong. You have to tell that to other people. Oftentimes you don't. If you're a detractor in your words, meaning that it's easy for you to, you're quick to reveal other people's faults and findings, failings, it means that you're first a detractor in your heart before you're one in your speech. Detractors tend to look for a sense of significance in pointing out the faults of others, and there's also a sense of superiority in being able to stand on a moral high plane and criticize. They also sometimes like to draw attention to themselves and draw down sympathy from others because they can be very self-centered as well. Sometimes we unfortunately enjoy hearing the gossip that comes from detraction, but be sure that the detractors going to do the same thing about you behind your back, so don't enjoy it too much. Love doesn't do those things. It doesn't do that. It's not detracting or slandering or rash or critical in its judgments. If we struggle in these and other areas, we have to ask Our Lady for help to overcome these things. Jesus said, you know a tree by its fruits, Luke 6:44, and we want our fruit to be good fruit, so that we have to also pray and learn not to rejoice over or take pleasure in any wrongdoing, as the apostle instructs us to do in 1 Corinthians 13. Praised be Jesus and Mary, now and forever.